WNST, Towson, Baltimore. At Baltimore Positive, we are positively into another Wise Conversations. Our friends at Wise Markets presenting these conversations throughout our Baltimore Positive platform. We have so many things going on. We're going to be with Johnny O. Acostas on Friday, along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, who is here now. On Sunday, I'm going to be at Wise Markets having the $6 signature crab cake. I'm even stopping at Fadley's on Monday because my dearest friend, John Keller, is coming in from Little Rock, Arkansas, and wants a proper crab cake. Don, I had a lot of proper crab cakes last month. I'm not here to talk about the bad ones I had in St. Michael's or that awful one I had down in Southern Maryland, but I had a lot of great crab cakes. And this next guest was at the heart, and Baltimore Magazine, Max will be here next week. I think Max Weiss is coming on too, that we have talked so much and so long and so hard about this state, and I'm wearing my State Fair shirt, and I saw Maryland flags everywhere. We had the governor on a couple weeks ago. Ron Cassie joins us from Baltimore Magazine now, who was one of the originators, an inspirer of all things. You don't need to go to Tahiti to have a good time. You don't need to go to Paris with Linda Don. You can just go to Deep Creek Lake or, find a little place down off Blackwater and get down to Old Salties and have a crab cake. Ron, it is a pleasure to have you on. And I have to be honest, I thought of you many, many times during August and little blurbs and snippets of information that I read along your pathway. And I was with my journalist buddy, Dan Rodericks, fly fishing out, in Western Maryland, right? We didn't catch any in West Virginia fish, although they were available, but I thought of you, so thank you for that. You were a gift to me on the tour, brother.
The kind words are much appreciated. It is it's Maryland is multiple states kind of all together. It's kind of funny that we all still are kind of cohesive because it is so different from Southern Maryland, Eastern Shore.
Well, I realized that when I made the left turn at Hurlock and I saw the Confederate flag flying over American soil at a size that I'm only familiar with United States flags in the Midwest that look like that. I saw lots and lots of stuff, the F. Biden stuff. I saw places with Anderson Cooper on a bullseye on the wall that said CNN sucked. And then I looked down on my phone and saw they don't get Wi-Fi. And when I saw the governor, the one thing that really struck me about traveling this state is the gap in information and in Wi-Fi and the web. We talked a lot about broadband. I mean, as a real social issue, the way we would discuss water, oxygen, electricity, if you don't have Wi-Fi. And I saw lots of places, and not necessarily impoverished places, although I saw some of those, but the information piece that we all would like to be on the same information plane. I saw a real discrepancy in that.
It's rural electrification really was not like that long ago. And we're at a similar moment, right? Yeah.
Well, it is. I mean, again, we love having Ron on. This time we actually have two of the latest edition. Nestor loves it. He loves them. Makes fun of my little pink tabs and everything.
No, it just tells me you were a school teacher. That's all it tells me. Reminded that you're not my friend. You're really my teacher,
But we've got the future of Harbor Place back in August. We've got the Johnny O issue in September. We want to talk about both of them. And I always, Nestor, I can't have Ron or Max on without saying to folks, look, it's fine if you pick this up at your local Wise Market or CVS or wherever, but get the subscription. I mean, do something that's financially smart. It's much, much cheaper. There's terrific articles and really in-depth reporting that you won't find anywhere else. So really get out there.
Well, it's a magazine about my favorite place,
Yeah, it's a great magazine. And Ron, let's just jump right in. I said, if we have time left at the end of the segment, we will talk about my summer with Ron, because you had some incredible summer travels, and Nestor, I know, will like to weigh in on that. But let's talk about a topic that's near and dear to our heart. We talked about this long before you wrote the article, and that is the future of Harbor Place. And
It's right here.
And I found it fascinating. You started with, I'm going to paraphrase, Anthony Hawkins is angry. That's the first paragraph is, Anthony Hawkins is angry. So anytime somebody's angry, I want the reporter to tell me why they're angry. So tell folks who Anthony Hawkins is, why they should pay attention, and why they should care that he's angry.
Well, Anthony Hawkins was the first general manager of Harbor Place. He worked for the Rouse Company for like 15 years. He's a Baltimore born and bred guy, completely like Morgan and Hopkins. And he was working in New Jersey when Harbor Place, late 70s, when the referendum passed. And I just want to distinguish for folks. There's the Inner Harbor, which is this vast area, basically from Fort McHenry all around to Canton. Harbor Place refers to essentially the two pavilions and the ground between those, right? So he oversaw the first 15 years, the whole boom, the when it was packed every day, Baltimore was getting national attention and tons of tourists. And like, you know, super hands-on, lives in one of the condos at Harbor East now. I mean, he's still, and he's just a great guy, great Baltimorean, loves the city, and is just angry, refuses to go inside those pavilions because of what they become. You know, they're more than 60% shuttered, vacant. After the Jim Rouse died and the Rouse Company sold those pavilions, sold Harbor Place to General Dynamics, and then to, it's been sold since. Now it's currently in receivership. You know, he's just angry. I've heard other people from that same era have gone in there and cried at what it's become. You know, it's boarded up. It's the same if you go to a Hagerstown or, you know, or a Cumberland or a Frostburg, and you see a little downtown boarded up, the main street. And so, yeah, that's why he's angry.
Well, I've been all over the state, and I actually dined in downtown Hagerstown at a beautiful, I can't pronounce it, the last name was Stubi, but it was German. So seeing these, I mean, downtown Frostburg, I was there too. I was in downtown Oakland, which was lovely and antique-y and beautiful. But downtown Baltimore is where I live. And as I reminded the governor 2 weeks ago down in Annapolis, hey, man, don't forget about us. You know, at some point, there needs to be a new dream, Ron. And I think I brought this up with you the last time we discussed it. It may have been, it was before COVID, I think, that so we're going back almost 2 years now. COVID's sort of like BC, you know, like, but I talked about whatever the vision is and whatever the next vision needs to be, that there's going to need to be a human, a plan. I've seen plans for bridges over this harbor, glass bridges. I've seen all of these. I've seen an arena built on Pier 5 and somebody's drawings that's going to bring people downtown. We've already got two stadia, and we're trying to figure out how to keep the baseball team and get it more vibrant than it's been lately. The football team's going to have to figure out how to get people downtown too. Harbor Place was Mayor Schaefer, right? Or I call him, I just said Mayor Schaefer, right? Not Governor Schaefer. But I remember seeing this video, and Don, you turned me on to this back a couple years ago when it was an MPT piece that had rerun, and I watched it, and it was made maybe 10 or 15 years ago. But it was an homage to Mayor Schaefer and Governor Schaefer and his accomplishments, probably funded by the state of Maryland to some degree. But it had old video, and there's then Mayor Schaefer looking young and spry and standing amongst grass in a video that was what that was. And I don't remember the grass there. You know, I have vague, but we're going back into the mid 70s here and what that was. Tell me what the next thing could be. And I've had friends of mine that have been to Detroit and been to other places and seen various revitalizations. But what are the plans? Like, who's talking about doing this? Who would talk about investing in this? And especially investing with something that's a real vision, which is what Harbor Place was. Now, the vision fell apart, and it's been 40 years, but it's going to be a vision thing, not a mall thing.
Well, let's start there, Nestor. I love that word, vision. And let's, Ron, help us understand, because you can't talk about Harbor Place without talking Jim Rouse, and anybody from here knows Jim Rouse, even if they know Edward Norton, you know Jim Rouse. So,
by the way, I was in the Meriwether district the other night, and I thought of Mr. Rouse.
There you go, Mr. Rouse. So, what was, Ron, for folks? Because not all of our listeners are natives, and they not all of them were alive in 1980. What was Jim Rouse's vision for Harbor Place? I love that question that Nestor raises.
Well, just go back a little bit further. Theodore McKeldin deserves the bulk of the credit for having a vision for the Inner Harbor and transforming from an industrial, you know, burning tires and banana boats and the whole. And then it was Schaefer's vision with Jim Rouse to build it.
Was that when Theodore McKeldin, Ted McKeldin, was governor of the state?
when he was mayor, when he came back.
He was mayor, okay.
Governor and became back to be mayor. And he gives this like second inaugural address when he comes back as mayor. And he says, the Inner Harbor is one of the, you know, really gems of the world. One of the urban, the fact that this deep water comes into the middle of our downtown, there are very few places in the world like this. And so he has the initial vision about getting rid of the warehouses, the industrial boats, tires were dumped there. And you can imagine the scale of to reclaim all this industrial space, the amount of money it took, investment, time. It was much bigger than building a two pavilions, right? Much, much bigger than anything it would take.
Well, when you think about the Science Center, all these things that are over my shoulder, the World Trade Center sitting 10 feet from the water and having to be erected in that way, right?
No, it was all more like Rash Field used to be. It was grassy. There was the city festival was down there, which is enormously popular. It was outdoor concerts.
They kind of didn't know what to do with it, so they made it a park, right?
Right. It was a grassy and they had festivals and live music and people appreciated the natural interaction with the water. The decision to build Harbor Place went on a referendum in 1978 and was a real dogfight, right? It was a little bit like Camden Yards Memorial Stadium. People loved the way it was, but the Harbor Place won and, you know, it was groundbreaking. It was visionary for its time. But you know, 40
you know what I think? I think there was a Disney part here for sure. That Disney World existed in 19. I went to Disney World in 1977. Epcot existed, right? Was being built around that time. That this always, and from the time I was a little boy, from the time Phillips came in and they brought Ocean City down to Harbor. You didn't have to get down to Ocean in order to have Phillips. So they brought an amusement park. You know, with a science center and animals and sort of a water zoo, right? It felt like Disney to some degree. And that's the vision I think it went off of. Let's make it an amusement, educational destination in that way, not just a park, right? That was the vision, right?
Right. It was definitely good. This is the year Don mentioned Jim Rouse. He built Columbia Mall, which nobody would build the Columbia Mall today, right? Like that malls are closing all over the country. But at the time, the malls, the marketplace, the Harbor Place malls were popular. And as you point out, Nestor, the Science Center and the aquarium, and I think the Science Center was actually there first, are still like enormously successful. If you go into I went as part of my reporting into the aquarium. I got like one ticket at like 4:15 I was allowed to enter. You know, it was very hard to even get a ticket to get in there. They're great attractions. You talk about the vision. It succeeded so wildly, Harbor Place. And it succeeded so wildly that Harbor Point, Fells Point, Canton, Fed Hill, Locust Point have boomed all around, right? Like enormously. So the vision that you hear people talk about today that make the most sense to me too is that Light Street spur that comes around the pavilions, right? All the traffic that comes from Camden Yards off 395 Conway Street. You know, if you get rid of that spur and drive the traffic directly up to Pratt Street and make McKeldin Plaza, like if you go stand on the corner of Light Street and Pratt, there's an enormous, completely empty McKeldin Plaza there now that is just no man's land. If you get rid of that Light Street spur and you bring McKeldin Plaza into the Inner Harbor and you knock down one or two of the pavilions and you plant some trees, parks are enormous economic generators, right? Like Patterson Park, the houses where I live, next door to me goes for like $375,000. It's because there's a park here. They're enormous generators. We have all the places to eat. I mean, the power plant, I mean, where ESPN Zone and Barnes & Noble used to be, the whole Galleria is all shuttered and empty. There's plenty of space for restaurants, for outdoor eating, for dining. But as the people at the Waterfront Partnership say themselves, not like 90% of the people, when they do surveys, come to the Inner Harbor to stroll and get water views. That's the way 90% of people come. And the pavilions, as they are now, the Harbor Place, are obstacles for that to people. So the core reason people come down with their kids, with their families, with their grandparents is to be near the water, to walk, and or to get in the boats, the pirate boats or the kayaks or all those things, go to the science center. They're not coming to go inside of a mall. And those things are obstacles now. And the rear of the pavilions, you know, right? They are, you know, there's dumpsters out there.
That's a brilliant observation, by the way. I've never heard that observation. And I live here. I live. So some people haven't been to the Inner Harbor in years. They come to games and avoid the Inner Harbor and all that because of all the things they hear on Fox 45, News at 11, News at 10, whatever it was. I walk to the harbor 185 times a year, every other day. You know, I walk to the harbor. Obstacles. That's fascinating. My business mind says, it's great land. Let's do something with it. My heart, Ron, my heart says that I was walking on the strip the other night at midnight. Literally, I walked from off the strip at the Hughes Center at midnight in 94 degree heat, a mile and a half to the strip. And I saw the most valuable real estate in America. The strip, if it's not Times Square in New York, it's the strip in Vegas, you know, per dollar real estate. And I thought, maybe they overdid this a little bit, you know, and I don't know what the harbor, I don't want them to overdo it, underdo it. I know that land has value. That is a fascinating concept, that if that were a beautiful functioning park, Jeff Mueller would have more success in selling my condo across the street.
I want to just to add this a little bit. There's a generation that thinks you need to have something for people to go buy and sell. And nothing is bought or sold in Patterson Park, in Druid Hill Park, in Bryant Park in New York, in Central Park. What does it cost to live around Central Park or about a building there? The property taxes the city would gain would way surpass the piddling they get, because they basically don't get any taxes from Harbor Place anymore. It's losing money. They don't pay any lease anymore. You want amenities, right? It's our city. It's our city. That's our land. It's our Inner Harbor. It should be amenities for the people who live in Baltimore. And essentially, I understand that, you know, this is a majority black city, but what we're talking about is reclaiming public land for a majority city of color and giving it back to people. It doesn't cost anything. When my daughter was little, we went down there all the time, and maybe we'd buy an ice cream cone. Maybe we'd get a snack at Barnes & Noble. We'd read a book together or something like that. That's the idea. It's not that everything needs to be bought and sold there. There's plenty of all that happening all the way from Canton to Locust Point. There's plenty of place on the other side of Pratt Street. You know, you can make Pratt Street into a tree-lined boulevard, two-way, slow down the traffic, make it a real kind of downtown boulevard for Baltimore instead of a, you know, urban highway where people fly up and down past. That's the vision that when the Downtown Partnership and Waterfront Partnership have asked architects and urban planners, and it's in our story. This is the ideas that they come up with. They see working all around the world.
Well, Ron, you mentioned that you talked to those folks in your article. You interviewed someone that I know, Klaus Phillipson, you know, the past longtime co-chair of the Urban Design Committee in Baltimore. I think you also talked to the folks, good buddies of ours at May and Reichel, who've had some other success down in the harbor area. Describe for folks if. And it probably would have been a good idea, maybe we will in a future segment, to have Klaus on. But if Klaus were on here now with us, what would if we made him king of the world and said, Klaus, design a new vision for what was Harbor Place? What would Klaus's, since you spent time with him, what would his vision be? And probably similar, I'm guessing, to the folks at May and Reichel.
The vision that Klaus has is Man Reichel and people like the Project for Public Space is basically what I've described, right? I mean, as a reporter, you're going out and talking to as many people you can, and eventually ideas, you know, make sense. And Klaus bringing in, you know, people didn't want to see, a lot of people in the city didn't want to see McKeldin Fountain get knocked down. But once it's knocked down, at that point, that Light Street spur should be removed. The pavilions can come down. The, you know, what It's, you know, there's, I'm going to go off from Klaus for a second, and you really should have him on. You really should have him on. But, you know, at Lake Montebello, for example, right, they closed it to car traffic during COVID. I mean, I think we've all seen during COVID how much people have gone outside and begin enjoying the outdoors again. And as Nestor knows from living by the Harbor Place, it's all concrete down there. But Lake Montebello closed off the traffic. And what happened was more people from a wider geographic area came. It's almost counterintuitive, right? You think people have to drive there to get there, but they closed traffic Lake Montebello, and they did like one of those heat maps about where people were coming from. And they came from a greater geographical area. And the same thing, instead of using Pratt Street to hurry people over to 83 and back out of the city, right? Like that's what it's basically for, to get to 83, right? That's why people are flying down there. If you slow that down and you make it a place where it's a pedestrian friendly, scooter friendly today, bicycle friendly, walkable street. You know, we all talk about Howard Street, Lexington Market being a shopping district. And you can imagine Pratt Street being like that with a tree lined boulevard. It's a big wide street. And you can imagine having this big, you know, more of a park. I mean, you'd still have outdoor cafe, food truck, but just as like Sandlot, and I think this is one of the things people like Klaus bring up, just as Sandlot was just like an intuitive idea, like we don't know really what to do over there at Harbor Point before we build this hotel. We'll dump a bunch of sand, we'll put an outdoor bar. And people just showed up and started playing volleyball, having outdoor cycling classes.
Every time I went by, their reggae music was banging, and I'm like, I want to go down there and have a beer, you know?
Right, that's where Baltimoreans went. And we talked about making Inner Harbor for Baltimoreans again. And part of that is just opening it up. So when kids from high school want to make their music videos, or they want to have outdoor cycling classes, or why not move the farmer's market to like McKeldin Square, right? I mean, why not make that a destination on Sundays? A big grassy outdoor area that rather than being underneath, you know, a highway, 83, like why not put that outside, make that a destination and get
well, as a guy that's bought a lot of veggies at the farmer's market on Sunday morning, my wife approves of your message, Ron Cassie. Ron Cassie is here from Baltimore Magazine, writing about all things local and talking all things Harbor Place. Don, I know you had other things on the docket, but I'm already learning stuff here. Don, you're on mute.
Yes, I am.
Before
I do go on mute, so I don't drive Nestor crazy when I chuckle my ice back and forth.
No idea how much it angers me.
Drives him absolutely insane. I'll probably do it more.
All I did was coach people on the proper way to do radio for 25 years. None of them listen to me. They're all employed by the competitor and still make the same mistakes on mic that I hear. So I try to like just run a clean show here.
Go on mute.
Listen,
go on mute.
When Mohler, when you were a social studies teacher with Lansdowne, was that where you started?
Lansdowne High School.
Did you allow kids to chew and pop gum in class?
Oh, it was a different era. Of course not.
Oh, of course you did.
We didn't let them wear hats. None of that. But let's get off of that.
Oh, let's get off of spanking a teacher. I know. No one hear that.
Before we go to the September issue and what you entitled, here's Johnny O. Again, if you haven't seen Ron's profile of Baltimore County Executive Johnny Oshesky, make sure you pick up the September issue of Baltimore Magazine. Before we do that, I can't let you stop talking about Harbor Place without talking about where the rubber meets the road. When you got done, Ron, are you hopeful or are you despondent or are you somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much frustrated, you know, like as somebody who spends a lot, I normally get around by my bike and my dentist is over in Locust Point. So I'm always going around that area. The mayor, who had initially said when he was running that the pavilions should come down, Jack Young said that they should come down. The mayor did not respond to 3.5 weeks of efforts to reach him, to see if he still believes that. Basically, they're in receivership. And there's somewhere between $60 and $80 million that are owed. And and what receivership means is that basically Deutsche Bank and Barclays own the mortgage on Harbor Place. And the receiver is a guy in Montclair, New Jersey, with a small financial group who's the assistant head golf coach at Seton Hall, right? This receiver is going to decide who gets the discounted price for Harbor Place. and they're going to make the best deal for Barclays and Deutsche Bank. And they're, what they're going to do is want to get businesses in there that will help pay that mortgage off. That they'll buy leases, right? The Johnny Rockets, the Hooters, whatever's in there. There'll be an announcement. There'll be a ribbon coming. Somebody will buy it. We'll talk about getting Maryland businesses in there, getting Phillips back, as Nestor mentioned, getting little maker spaces of Baltimore, creatives in there. And this is going to be the game changer.
Ron,
and
isn't that just more of the same?
It's just more of the same. It's not going to be a game changer. People like to go to Ichiban and Fells Point. People like to go to the Helmond. Moving Ichiban to Helmond inside the Harbor Place is not going to change the dynamic. People don't go inside into malls. That's not why even people go to the Harbor for decades anymore, right? They want to be outside. So you could conceivably take the $641 million from Joe Biden, take a small fraction of that, take like $60 million of it. The city could buy Harbor Place.
Is that what you think it would cost, Ron, around 60?
Yeah, around $60 million. It could take around $60 million. I've seen different numbers about the mortgage, but when you're buying something, you're getting, like, if you're paying your debtor, your debtor is going to take, your creditor is going to take a fraction of the money.
Sure.
I think you get it for like $60 million or so, buy Harbor Place, and they could, take down the one that's on Pratt Street, start remaking the Light Street Spur and Pratt Street as all the architects that they've ever had do design competitions have done, and follow through on that. And it would be, it's job producing, it's economic activity. You're investing money into city businesses, construction companies, union workers to do this stuff. And it could be transformative and bold. It's the thing Schaefer and McKeldin did at the time, right?
Promise we will bring this up. We're going to meet with the mayor in a couple of weeks. Those of you out there, love Baltimore, love the city, I encourage you to really read the article on Harbor Place. Well, hey, Ron, I also want to give a shout out, and you guys do this every month. I get it. I get the hard copy, but then I do read it online when it comes on my computer. And you always add some great photos or graphics that aren't in the in the print copy. And the ones you added for the Harbor Place edition were really terrific.
It's a nice thing. And I think as a journalist, I've got to say that big white space that you have with the web, with the computer screen is great. Cause you can put in maps, you can put in additional art,
interactive as well.
Interactive. We did a book review with Carmelo Anthony's new book, that he wrote with D Watkins that published yesterday. That's in our next issue. And I interviewed both D Watkins and Carmelo Anthony, and so in print, we, of course, have Carmelo Anthony's interview. But, online, we can put both interviews together because D. Watkins adds, he co-wrote it with Mello. And it's, if you guys haven't read that book.
I'd love to get D. Watkins on the show. I'm going to have to get back with you on that, figure out how to get him on.
Yeah, I can give you his contact information. Mello's book ends at draft day. It's basically a Baltimore book. I mean, Baltimoreans are going to appreciate this book like nobody else. But, it is one of those things you can do. You can add additional content.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, it's terrific. So, I encourage folks.
Last thing, I want to get to you on this Harbor Place thing, because I am sitting with the mayor in 3 weeks. We are sitting with the mayor at Coco's over a crab cake. I'm thinking for his constituency that is a Brandon hardcore voter and supporter, any talk about the Inner Harbor and spending money on the Inner Harbor would not be politically expedient, I would think. Although from the business community and from taxpayers who live down here and invested down here, and we're talking about keeping the baseball team, and what will the baseball team be, and what will the football team be, and what will the arena be, and what will these other tenants of down, what will every hotel be when all this is over within the convention center? That space sits in the center of it, and it needs to be discussed, even though it probably won't be politically popular to spend money on that. Because the first thing I say as a taxpayer is, it's our land. Why the hell are the citizens paying $60 million for something they're going to rip down? I can hear, that's an unsophisticated take on it, but I can hear that being very noisy.
It is. And Schaefer had to make the case. Initially, there was opposition to Harbor Place, especially like Little Italy. They just saw competition. But remember, downtown itself is more than 50% people of color that live there. It's one of the fastest growing areas downtown. I don't mean Fells Point or I mean the hardcore downtown. If you go to the harbor, as you know, it's a very diverse space. It's one of those
incredibly diverse.
Baltimore that's incredibly diverse. It's like the farmer's market, Artscape, or Ravens game where you see everybody from all walks of life. And I think you have to, it has to be, as we're reclaiming this for our city, we're not giving it to, I mean, to be blunt, we're not giving it to white businessmen or white developers. That's not why we're doing this. And we're going to put people to work in the city to redevelop this, make it a place. You know, if you live downtown, Patterson Park or Carroll Park are not that close necessarily, right? Like Druid Hill Park. There's a lot of neighborhoods like in Pigtown and South Baltimore that, you know, it's a short bus ride. It's basically walkable or bikeable for teenagers to get to, a green space, that's
the business side of me would say they have to sell something to create economic interest. Your point is very, very well taken, that a park is its own thing that would create businesses along the abutting sides that would have views of the park,
Nestor,
right?
Both
like
of
all
you,
of that.
Both of you have been, when Ron talks about it, and I hear Kloss talk about it, hear, you know, Brian Dunn and others and our friends at Man Reichel talk about it. I really do think, and I know some people are going to turn their nose up at this, it really is to me almost a European model. When I think of European cities and the strength of their open spaces and their parks, and Nestor, you've been all around the world. Ron, you've been all around. I mean,
best cities in the world are cities you walk through.
But you walk through and have these beautiful open spaces with often nothing but a few benches and people throwing bocce ball or what have
and
you.
And getting food over there, right over right. there, really close.
Right.
Whatever kind of food they want.
There's no central gathering place in Baltimore. Right. There's no, we don't have that public plaza, piazza, they would say, like in Italy or Spain, that central gathering place that all great cities have. And all around, we can name all the parks that we're familiar with, Central Park, Patterson Park. There's businesses all around, ice cream, coffee shops, restaurants.
Correct.
As there are all around the Inner Harbor from Canton to Fells Point. And you have all of, ideally, what would happen, right, is you get businesses into the Pratt Street and going up Charles Street. The idea is to get some foot traffic up Charles Street then too, right? You don't have, every inch does not have to be covered with a commercial transaction. You know, in fact, it deadens the space in reality.
Well, Harbor Place to be continued. From Harbor Place in September, you went and spent the day with one of our favorite county executives, Johnny O, out in Baltimore County, obviously a county that I care deeply about. Well, what'd you learn by spending the day with County Executive Olszewski? Tell folks out in Cumberland who might not know him what you learned about this Baltimore County guy.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've known the county executive since he was a state delegate in Dundalk, from Dundalk, and which, you know, he was really young then, like 26 or something. But watching him, you know, in the first district, I guess, is Arbutus in that area and Woodlawn. And he really spent, I mean, this is just a personal thing, but I think we like this and we like it in people. We like it in our elected leaders. He spends time and he listens to people. He doesn't talk at people, doesn't put agenda. He listens, he spends time. He's never, you know, is like looking at his watch, rush to go to the next place. I think that's the big thing. We went to like the, I'm going to forget the name of the place, the blind manufacturing facility in down Route 1. He listens to people, you know, he spends time, he's down to earth that way. There's no wall between him and people or anybody he speaks to.
Ron, you, when you talked with him and you got into this a bit in the article, and boy, do I remember the night well. You talked about the night in 2016 when he was part of this, you know, the Democratic Party being blown up in the state of Maryland. What sense did you get about Johnny as he looks back to that night?
He was remarkably poised, and I think in a way, and I'm not sure this was explicit in the article, but I think it's the underlying theme throughout the whole thing. You know, he sometimes is a younger guy, more on the progressive side of the Democratic Party than the conservative side of the Democratic Party. So sometimes when being a delegate representing Dundalk, a conservative area, you know, you're weighing that battle as a politician. Do I do what I think is best, or do I do what the district wants me to do, right? Because you're both. You're representative of them, but they're also telling you, you're also there to make the tough calls. And I think the fact that it was Jim Brosian and Vicky Allman, and he had and they were similar, I think, politically, and you, Don, you're more familiar with all this than I am. I think it created a lane for Johnny that he felt comfortable in running in, that he could be kind of himself, true to his values, run that way, went all around the county, especially the western side where people didn't know him as well, meet people, hear them. And I think it's continued a little bit as county executive. You know, he had, it may have been a different race if it wasn't that close in that three-way thing. In a way, it freed him up to find his lane and be his true self and let the chips fall where it may. And I think he's continued that as county executive.
Well, it's been no doubt about it. And I think I said to you in the article that he has that magic sauce. And boy, you captured it in your comments that you can't teach and you can't fake. You either are genuine or you're not genuine. And I think people have pretty good BS detectors. And they know when an elected official is going through the motion, as opposed to someone who's able to really listen. You know who else has that? And, you know, certainly someone that those of us who've been around the county a long time, worked from, learned from, and doesn't sometimes get a credit enough for this is Dutch. You know, I always remember way back when Dutch raised the salaries significantly for police officers in Baltimore County and didn't give a similar raise to the firefighters. And that was unusual because typically whatever you give to police, as you know, Ron, you give to fire and you give to teachers. And the fire union was furious with Dutch. And Dutch, against probably advice of some of his advisors, said, I'm gonna go down there. I'm going to go talk to them. And Dutch, just being Dutch, walked in and said, look, guys, I get it. But here's what I was looking at. And he said, look, our police were ranked, and I'll get the numbers wrong, but our police were ranked 12th in the state. That's not acceptable. Our firefighters were ranked 3rd in the state. Much, much better. I've got to get the police up to where you are. And then going forward, we can be back. But that's the decision. So Dutch has that ability, I think, to always, you know, everybody knows Dutch. Now he'll be the last one to leave because he'll talk to everybody. I mean, Dutch likes people. And I get that sense from Johnny, as you said, and willing to make tough decisions and also doesn't really get angry, right? Did you pick up on that? I mean, he's pretty calm.
Yeah, I thought, one of the Republican county councilmen, Councilman Mark, said that very well, that things can be difficult fight. You can lose a vote one way or another, but it's not. There isn't a grudge that's carried to the next battle, the next debate. And I think genuinely, like you said, it's somebody can say those things, but for someone really not to carry that grudge, not to be like, oh, I'm going to get this person back, or because we all see this stuff happen, right? We all see Jack Young loses a battle and then he doesn't like the way somebody, not even lose the battle. He wouldn't like the way somebody voted, and they all do it almost. They lose a committee seat or a chairman seat, right? They lose an assignment. There's punishment, right?
I can tell you some stories. I won't use names, but some of my predecessors, if you voted the wrong way, you did not get to come down on the mezzanine for a long, long time. You were banished to an island for a long, long time. I know we're coming up short. Hey, did you get any sense from the county executive? Have any regrets over his decision about not running for governor? Because I think most people think he would have been a very, very competitive candidate for governor and run a very, very strong campaign. Any regrets on his part regarding that?
No, I My sense is the opposite, you know, that he really, as a, you know, have a second term as county executive, and as a guy, you know, as he said, you know, born, raised, went to college, in the county, lives Miller's Island, that to leave that mark, to have that, you know, I mean, you get to, you know, in a sense, I mean, he's 36, maybe you're not thinking about a legacy yet, but like to be a county executive for two terms in a county where you're born and raised and have those deep roots. And I think is, you know, I think he wants to walk away feeling like he's made a difference in the county, and that, and then, you know, cause governor, you know, it's a roll of the dice, you know, right? Like, so I don't think so. There's certainly plenty of time and, you know, room to grow and, yeah.
Well, again,
I'll save my thoughts for Johnny O when we have Johnny O this week.
The September issue, Nestor. Here's Johnny O.
I like it. Go pick it
up at your Wise Market. Or
talk about recon. I have to do my recon for the Johnny O conversation, Doc.
And get a subscription, folks. One of our favorite guests, Ron Cassie. We always love having him on. Nestor, take us out of here.
Ron, you working any books or anything? Or no? Books on the Ravens' demise right now?
No, I don't. I mean, am I reading any books right now?
That yeah, or writing any books. You're authoring things always.
Yeah, I've got something in mind that's a long-term project. Yeah, I'm not quite willing.
All right, you'll
come back
later.
And tell us when you've put the pen to pencil, right?
Or all these Hemingway types have all of this drama with them, you know. So we'll come back, Ron.
Hey, Nestor, you know, you mentioned that you're a writer, Ron. I'm sure you all saw the incredible Ken Burns special on Hemingway. It resonates with me every time I sit down to write something. Was Hemingway's line of "I start every day with the goal of trying to write one perfect sentence." And then go from there. And I thought, that's a pretty good goal. Right?
I'll put one thing out there. There is a book that's going to be coming out in a while, and it's a little ways off, maybe probably a year off. A story of Baltimore stories, an anthology, a collection of like from like 40 different writers from Baltimore.
Oh.
And Rafael Alvarez and Dee Watkins and some other writers. I know.
Let me know when you need my passage. Just let me know any words.
Editing it and so that should be really interesting. A really diverse group of writers.
Oh, can't wait to read that. Raphael, one of my St. Joe buddies, he and I sang the St. Joe fight song for Nestor when he joined us. We'll be glad to have him back on and sing again, Nestor.
My thoughts of Raphael are always the same. Him and Simon running like maniacs at 3 a.m. in the newsroom back in 1987. So that's the way I'll always think of them. They'll always think of me as being 18. He is Ron Cassie at Baltimore Magazine. And on behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, reminder, Johnny O joins us at Costas as part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Brandon Scott joining us at Coco's as part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. That's going to be on October 8th. I'll have some more words about next week as well. And reminder, on Sunday, I'm at Wise in Fullerton having the $6 signature crab cake. I'm working on my own slurry right now. I'll tell you more about that later. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, and anywhere that the Ravens are playing football on Sundays in the future, including Luke out in Owings Mills. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.